6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Chris and Anna. I'm Chris, and I'm alone. That's right. Anna is not here this week. She has taken the opportunity over the course of the holiday season to head home. She has gone back into the UK, and that has left me on my own to talk, which, as you probably know, longtime listeners, I'm apt to do. But it's not often that I have recorded an episode completely on my own, completely blind, with no notes, and that's what I'm doing this week. It is going to be rough. I'm just riffing. I have an idea what I want to talk about. We'll cover Rewind. We'll cover a few things that I collected from you, our listeners, on social media as to some of your memories and festive holiday traditions. But the focus of today's episode is just to sit back, enjoy a nice glass of eggnog, which, again, is a fabulous drink. I can't believe some of you don't think so. And just enjoy the time together, because if you're looking at a calendar right now, you'll also notice this episode is somewhat unusual in that it's coming to you, or at least published, on December 25th, a day or sort of time frame we here at C4 normally take off. But we're actually going to be away next week. We're going to take the New Year's off. Anna will be making her transit home, and I myself will be recovering from what will happen to be an epic week of family fun with the wife, the daughter, the cat, and the dog, and all the rest of the family around me. But before we get into all of the festive tidings, let's talk a little bit about those Vancouver Canucks. As I am recording, and as you will probably be listening to this episode, they are first overall in the NHL. You heard me right. First overall in the NHL. No team has a better record than the Vancouver Canucks have as of Christmas Day 2023. I know some of you will consider me to be a pessimist, and there's a lot of truth to that. But even an optimist such as former co-host Clay Emo could not have imagined the Vancouver Canucks to be in the position that they are now. I saw a quote on Facebook from a longtime Canucks blogger who shifted more towards the BC Lions, Brian Orishan. He ran Canucks Corner, CanucksCorner.com a while back. And he had actually asked, you know, anyone, you know, who had the Vancouver Canucks first overall at this point of the season, raise your hand, .. Anyone who raised it is a liar. And I honestly don't think there's even anyone in the organization who saw them doing as well as they are. Whatever this team is doing is working, and I really hope the few days they have off between now and their next game against the Flyers, when the Flyers roll in later in the week, that they can continue that trend. But it is amazing that we're enjoying this fun Canucks hockey yet again. So let's take a quick break, drop a noise, and get in the Rewind. If you recall in our last episode, Anna and I had looked at the week that has now been as being one in which the Vancouver Canucks were likely going to find themselves run into not a lot of trouble, just a little trouble. We believed that the team was going to win two of the three games. We felt the game on Saturday against the San Jose Sharks was maybe not guaranteed win night, but win night. And we knew that there might be trouble either in Nashville or in Dallas. Well, as it played out, there was some trouble in Dallas, though not as bad as maybe Anna and I had guessed. The Vancouver Canucks rolled into Nashville having had a day off, and they played a relatively smart game. I wouldn't say the Vancouver Canucks, despite the score being 5-2, really controlled play. But they were a defensively sound team, an area that we know the Canucks have been better in throughout the season, yet still have occasional struggles. So what we saw against the Preds was a game that I think bodes well as the team gets into 2024 and starts to really posit itself or position itself as a true Stanley Cup contender. And I can't believe I'm actually saying these words right now. The Canucks, by getting that 5-2 win, extended their point streak to seven. So that's seven straight games with a point. And yes, the loser points do count in that regard. But you got goals from both Pettersson and Suter, Quinn Hughes, McKeever. They got some apples. You had DeSmith who started. And this is another nice thing that the Vancouver Canucks have available in Casey DeSmith is a backup who can take quite a bit of that load from Thatcher Demko, but also provide a, you know, solid effort in the crease. There's really not a whole lot that I can comment about the game because it was a good game. I mean, the Canucks, yes, were in control. They weren't dominant. They played defensively sound hockey. And that win really, you know, set the tone. So that gets us into Thursday when the Vancouver Canucks roll into Dallas to take on the Dallas Stars, a team that historically, at least since the ownership has changed, have played the Canucks really well. It was a back and forth affair. I wouldn't say that the Vancouver Canucks played really good hockey. Like if you look at what they did against the Predators, where they had a very smart, defensively sound game in Dallas, not at all the case. But yet the Vancouver Canucks were in a position to potentially, you know, win that game in regulation. If it wasn't for a quick goal after Connor Garland's goal in the third from Harley, it's likely that the Canucks find a way to get home with two wins. But that said, they got themselves into overtime. And despite having two glorious opportunities, ended up cashing out with just the loser point with a goal from Matt Duchene. And just to put things into perspective as to how this game went down is the Canucks had a 2-on-0 breakaway and did not score. So, you know, it wasn't their night. But one of the things that occurred to me in watching them play is they looked tired. And if we consider the Vancouver Canucks schedule really from the start of the season until now, their early season schedule was not soft, but maybe well-structured to allow for adequate recovery. Whereas in the more recent, you know, few weeks, they most get two nights off. They've been playing game after game after game after game. If we go back into November, they had a few back-to-backs as well mixed in. And so there really hadn't been an opportunity to the Vancouver Canucks to truly sort of get that time that they needed to fully decompress, recover from whatever injuries might be ailing them. Again, I still believe Pettersson is fighting something, whether it be a bug or an injury. I don't quite know. But the Canucks come out of Dallas with a loser point, and that takes us to our last game not the last game of 2023. You know, the Canucks actually have one more, but the last game before the holiday break, and that was against the San Jose Sharks at home. This one was both exciting and frustrating all in the same time. The Vancouver Canucks come out, you know, guns blazing, getting two early goals in the first period, both from Andre Kuzmenko. Kuzmenko had been provided the opportunity to get back up onto the top line, gets an early goal, gets another goal on the power play. And that's an area he's continued to get an opportunity to go on, despite his role within the lineup when he does get dressed. But then the Vancouver Canucks started making defensive mistakes, and they kept allowing the San Jose Sharks to find their way back into the game. Now, the Sharks are not that same team that the Vancouver Canucks beat 10-1. I mean, yes, they are, but that team that they beat is not sort of the same mindset that plays today. And I think it got brought up on the broadcast. I don't know if it was by Dave Tomlinson during the play, but someone had shared how, you know, since that 10-1 drubbing, the Sharks now look at the Canucks and they sort of step up their game. They provide a much stronger effort because they don't want to be embarrassed again. And yes, the score was 7-4. So you might suggest, well, hey, Chris, look, the Vancouver Canucks, they were dominant. Like San Jose was never in this game, but that's not entirely true. When you get out of the first period tied 2-2, and then in the second, get your two goal lead back only to then, you know, give up a goal to Zetterlund soon after the two-goal lead's extended, you're allowing a team to remain present. Yes, Joshua got them out of the second period with that two-goal lead again, but you know, midway through the third period when McDonald scored, things sort of got interesting. So when Pia Suter got that deflection, and it was a beautiful tip, you know, late in the third period, that finally sort of gave me some ease that the Vancouver Canucks were going to get that win. And we already knew, based on the result of the earlier games, that the Vegas Golden Knights had not done their job. So the Canucks were going to be going in to the break, at least first in the West. But the win gave them, you know, first overall in the NHL, which again is nuts to say. But that Quinn Hughes empty netter, just icing on the cake, 12 seconds left to allow for the celebration to ensue. It was a fabulous game to watch on TV. And again, it's just fun hockey. I get that, you know, there are areas the Canucks still need to work on. Like their blue line is looking good, but there are some, you know, worries regarding, you know, how much more they can pull out of their third pairing. Yes, acquitting themselves well, but depth is still somewhat of a concern. Canucks did not get Ethan Bear. He's in Washington, so there's still some thought that maybe more will take place. The benefit of Bear is his money probably would have fit a whole lot better than trying to acquire someone through trade, which then requires other dominoes to fall. But regardless, that's a next year problem. That's something that we can continue to sort of talk about in 2024. Were you at the game on Saturday? I know a few of you might have had the opportunity to get there, but I just wanted to share, if you had not heard about it or seen it, is that a number of fans had dressed up for the season or the holidays. There was a group of Santas all dressed up and another group of elves. And I guess they had, you know, set themselves in different areas of the arena. Eventually, the Santas went out and found the elves, and a brawl ensued. Not a real brawl, apparently. It was all in good fun. But again, when was the last time that you can think that the Vancouver Canucks in arena atmosphere was this electric? I'm not discounting the efforts of the Larshiders over the past few seasons to try to invigorate the experience. They have done their duty, but it requires there to be sort of a more organic approach to things, and that has started to happen. You know, Luongo said it best, you know, hockey is fun again in Vancouver, and this is the way it should be. And again, it is truly an exciting time to be a Vancouver Canucks fan. Before I take a short break and get into the festive spirit here, I did want to talk a little bit about the week that will be. So the Vancouver Canucks are off for four straight days before they play the Philadelphia Flyers at home on the 28th. Now, when the Flyers come rolling into town, the Canucks will have been rested, refreshed. I actually don't know what to make of the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, they're not a horrible team. They are, you know, coming into Vancouver, their, I believe, first game after the holiday break. So, again, equally rested, though, with a little bit of a travel mixed in. But they do have to then head down the highway to Seattle for the game on Friday night. So it'll be interesting as to which of the two teams they approach as being their, not tougher competition, but the team as to which they feel that they have a, you know, a better chance to beat. I'm going to have to go with the Vancouver Canucks, obviously wearing my blue tinted glasses, but also they are currently first overall in the NHL. It's hard to go against the team that is at the top of the table, so to speak. So I say the Canucks are going to take points there. And then if we continue to look ahead at the Vancouver Canucks, their next game isn't until 2024. They actually take on the Ottawa Senators on the 2nd. Ottawa rolls into town. Ottawa not looking so good. They've made some changes behind the bench. Jacques Martin is coaching again. It's been a few years since he had, and well, he's back. And then the Vancouver Canucks are back out on the road. And this road trip's a massive one. They take off to take on the Blues in Seattle on the 4th. They've got a Saturday night or afternoon game, depending on your perspective, against the New Jersey Devils. They then stay in the East by taking on both the Rangers and the Islanders on the 8th and the 9th, the Penguins on the 11th, the Sabres on the 13th, and then the Blue Jackets on the 15th. So essentially a 2-week road trip over the course of, well, what is that, 10 days before they get home, and they have, just doing quick math here, seven. So 7 games over the course of 10, 11 days is pretty tough. Thankfully, they return home to take on the Coyotes. But it's back to some tough hockey, you know, as we sort of continue to proceed in the season. And you can look forward to the 20th of January when the Toronto Maple Leafs show up and the Vancouver Canucks are forced to play a 4 p.m. Pacific start at home. But that's what happens when the Leafs roll in. All those eyeballs in the East, you know, require an early start. Anna and I, though, will be back to talk about the week-ish that has been from the Flyers through to the Devils in January. We will return and record on the 7th with that episode going live on the 8th. So you can rest assured we'll be talking about plenty. And in turn, you know, I do want to take this opportunity to wish you all well. But there's more show to come. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Chris and Anna.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
When Anna and I were talking about our recording schedule going into sort of this holiday season, we were trying to ascertain, like, how would we make this work? And initially, Anna and I had talked about recording a New Year's show, though her return to Canada from her trip doesn't have her getting back in until New Year's Day. And she, I guess, had it in her mind that we could potentially record that day, though obviously that requires her plane to land on time and all the travel, not to completely drain her. So I'd said, no, let's take that week off. In fact, I had suggested maybe we take 2 weeks off. Something that's somewhat unheard of with the podcast in its current iteration. But again, it's just her and I, and we've really come to realize how important it is to focus on ourselves as much as we love creating content for you, our listeners. But giving it some more thought, I figured, you know, I've done this in the past where around this time of year, I record something for our listeners. If I think back to the old days of C4 Off the Rails and the Patreon show that we would occasionally do, I did a couple solo efforts, around this time for our patrons. I don't know, actually thinking about it, if I've ever recorded a solo show for all of our listeners, though it has been 13 years of a C4 Canucks hockey podcast, which again, still blows my mind. I mean, come 2024, we're only 6 months away from, you know, completing that and getting into year 14, which is just, again, almost absurd. But has it been 13? Let me do bad math. No, 12. Okay, 11. 11 to 12. See, math is not my strong suit. You know, we've always talked about CHB counts to 3. But, yeah, it's amazing. And that means, if we think about it, that's been 11 holiday breaks, 11 holiday shows. And I really wanted to sort of get into the festive mood, which brings me to the matter of, you know, the atmosphere doesn't seem to be a whole lot. So let me cue up a little sort of holiday themed jazz here. Let's see. Yes. Yeah, I'm digging it. I think this gives me some, you know, good vibes, good feel, right? Kind of like, you know, we're kicking back, we're enjoying that nice glass of eggnog, you know, the fireplace is on the TV, though maybe some of you actually have real fireplaces. And, you know, I thought it would be a good opportunity to sit down and talk about some of our favorite holiday memories. And I thought I would share one of my very first holiday memories when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks. I think I've shared this story on a previous episode or two, or maybe in conversation with some of you, but I can't remember the particular Christmas it happened to be, but underneath the tree was an envelope from Santa, and Santa had left me two tickets to watch the Vancouver Canucks play the Washington Capitals at the old Pacific Coliseum. And back then, you know, going to hockey games was a real treat. The experience was a whole lot different than it is today. But, you know, making that trip to sort of the east side of Vancouver, to the Pacific Coliseum, to the fairgrounds, the Peony, and all of that, just, it was an experience. And I remember, you know, going downtown to meet my mom, who at the time worked at Woodward's department store. And from there, we made the trip on the bus all the way out to the Pacific Coliseum. The Vancouver Canucks won the game. I know that. I think the game score was like 7-6 or something crazy. It was electric. There were just goals being scored. And it was just myself and my mom sitting up behind one of the nets up in the upper bowl. But I just remember that experience, and I just absolutely loved it. I believe my parents got me one of those old starter pullover jackets. It was a Vancouver Canucks themed one. I had a couple of those, and I don't know how many of you remember them, but they were like these big, bulky, like winter jackets, starter brand, and they were different sports teams. I had like a San Francisco 49ers jacket, which as a kid growing up, never really was a fan of the NFL, but I guess the 49ers must have been big around the time. I'm thinking it might have been when Montana was playing, Jerry Rice. But regardless, Seahawks maybe weren't as good. So 49ers may have been that West Coast team, but the Canucks, you know, starter jacket, that was top notch. And I wore that, and it was just an all around good experience. But this wasn't all about me. I have another story I'm going to share a little bit later. But I had asked out on social media, and I'd asked in C4 Discord as to, you know, what some of the memories that you might have. And Keith over on Threads, he shared that his first ever Canucks game that he got tickets to was seemingly the annual New Year's Eve game at home against the Flyers. And I just want to take a quick note here. The Flyers are in town. However, not for New Year's Eve, but historically, that's often been when Philadelphia shows up. It's not really a rivalry, I don't think, but it just happens to be when Philly comes into town. But he goes on to talk about being a pretty cool experience for the 11-year-old in him, and this was, again, back in the early 90s. It provided him the opportunity to see the team that he had loved for the first time, which he felt was pretty special. And then getting given a signed hockey card from Troy Gamble was a core memory from that. He still thinks about that day every time he goes to a Canucks game since. And that's pretty cool. You know, it's very similar to mine, that opportunity to go to that game. And again, I think that might have been my first game when I went and saw the Capitals. I did go to a few more after that. I remember my parents allowed me to take a bunch of friends to a Canucks game, and you know, all these teenagers dropped off, we got sitting up in the upper bowl, we behaved ourselves ish those days are different than they are now. I think my parents bought like 2-pack tickets from like Shoppers Drug Mart, all in one section or something like that. But like Keith's memory and the memory of mine, like it we all have that, especially if we've grown up in Vancouver, being able to have that opportunity to go to a Canucks game, or even if you're a fan from abroad, having that opportunity to see the Vancouver Canucks for the very first time, it's a memory that stays with you for so long. On Facebook, a friend of the show, Ron Chapp from Pucks on Net, he actually shared a pretty solid story, and I'm going to read it verbatim because I think I would do him a disservice not to. So it was Christmas 2008. I was 21 and my dad got me a Canucks Letterman style jacket for Christmas. It had these bright white leather sleeves and looked similar to the Yankees jacket George Costanza wore on Seinfeld. It was incredibly uncool, and I held it up and hid my face as I looked at it. My sister asked out loud, "Oh, you don't like it?" But my dad cut her off and said, "Of course he likes it. It's a cool jacket. He's just checking the size, making sure it fits." I soon learned that my dad spent over $300 on it. The jacket in question was my big ticket Christmas item that year. He spent the same amount on the jacket as he did my sister's new Nintendo Wii. He was so proud of his find and proclaimed, "I have never seen a jacket like that before. It's so cool." I was riddled with stress and anxiety all morning. this jacket was something I would never, ever wear. I realized my dad maybe was still buying gifts for a teenager in high school and not someone in their early 20s breaking into broadcasting in the local sports market. I could never wear this jacket to the rink on the job. Early in the afternoon, I mustered up the courage to tell my dad the jacket wasn't great, and I didn't want him to waste money on something I would never wear. I felt awful doing that, but it had to be done. We went to the store in the mall in Abbotsford he got it from, and it was an exchange only, no refund. So I decided to get a signed photo of Jerome Iginla and Trevor Linden during one of my favorite moments in Canucks history, Trevor Linden's last game when Iggy brought all the Flames out to shake his hand. It's a fabulous story, Ryan, and I think, you know, again, it's probably something where we've all had that experience where we've received that gift that maybe didn't quite land, but then the person providing it to us, in this case, your parents, you know, thought it would. I commend you for your honesty. I don't know if I would have been able to muster up the fortitude to go and talk to my dad had he gotten something like that. But nonetheless, it's also a whole different perspective when you're trying to break into broadcasting and, you know, then wearing the team that you're potentially covering's gear to the rink. Me, on the other hand, I could probably, you know, wear it and pull it off. And outside of maybe people looking at me, kind of wondering what I'm wearing, that would be that. But that moment you talk about, the Trevor Linden last game where Iginla brought the Flames back on the ice, I remember that clearly. You know, as is with most, you know, final games of the season, the Flames had celebrated their win and off they go. And the Vancouver Canucks, their season was done. But while the Flames have all started to truck off the ice, Jerome had waited and called everyone back out. And then they shook Trevor's hand, kind of like what you would see at the end of a playoff series, but this individually with Trevor. So having, you know, that signed photo is pretty cool. And I'm curious, did both Jerome and Trevor sign it, or was it just Trevor's signature on it? Kathy over on Threads. Kathy talked about a very recent memory, one that actually just occurred this weekend, about how she was able to go to a game with her 94-year-old season ticket holder father and her sister from Toronto and her husband, which is pretty cool. You know, having a father who's in their 90s who remains a season ticket holder. And that's the thing about the Vancouver Canucks, is that there are a lot of fans who've been cheering on this team for quite some time. I'm making an assumption here that he isn't a more recent season ticket holder at the seasoned age of 94. But then being able to go to a game, and the game, you know, last night was a great one. You had an opportunity to see Kuzmenko score a couple times, which I comment about on Threads. You had the opportunity to see the Vancouver Canucks get that win, and then to go home and then see, and for confirmation's sake, and maybe they announced it in the rink, that they are first overall going into the holiday break, which is just so darn cool. And finally, Sarah over on Facebook, her core holiday memory as it pertains to the Vancouver Canucks is the old live blog chat. And this one's kind of cool to me as well. For those that don't know this, the Vancouver Canucks, in the early foray into the social media side of sports, and this is probably prior to Twitter really taking off. I mean, Facebook was around, but it hadn't really become the public square that it may have wanted to have become. So the Vancouver Canucks had a forum, Canucks.com forums, which I believe have now since been wound down. But to really get an engaged group of fans together for a live game experience, they launched what they called their live blog series. So while Canucks.com forums had a game day thread and there would be conversation, it really wasn't a synchronous conversation, because you would post a comment and then you would have to actually then refresh to see who else might have replied. And so there was sort of a disjointed conversation taking place in a threaded experience, aka a forum. So the live blog allowed for this synchronous conversation. And as luck would have it, I soon became a live blog moderator. And I honestly don't quite remember how I stumbled into the opportunity, but I was able to sort of help you know, facilitate that conversation on a nightly basis. In fact, the team had elevated me to having the ability to not only launch the live blog, but to shut it down. Whereas prior to that, there were only two people at the time that could do that. Kevin Kinghorn, who was a director of marketing, I believe. He's now, I think, chief marketing officer for the Portland Trailblazers. And then, you know, everyone who's been a long-term listener of the podcast, but also a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, know of Derek Jory. He also had the ability to turn off. But that was, again, something they had given to me. But Sarah, I got to connect with her through the live blog. And we used to have some really good times, especially around the holidays. A lot of the meme sort of content that came into the, you know, Canucks sort of atmosphere or orbit came out of the live blog. Again, this is sort of pre-Twitter days, like Peanut Butter Burrows time. That came out of the live blog. And from there, it just became its own experience. But the holidays was always fun. Again, it was just a festive time. And win or lose, the Vancouver Canucks sort of live blog experience and those who continued to show up to talk puck was always a cool group of people. But I wanted to share another holiday-themed memory as it pertains to the Canucks. And it's somewhat of, you know, the vein of the live blog. And that is Canucks Hockey Blog, something that we used to do. JJ Guerrero, the founder of CHB, he used to host a holiday mixer, is I think what he called it, every season. He would rent a suite at the Hyatt in downtown Vancouver. Invite a bunch of friends like the Canucks or whatever out and we'd have a good time. You'd often see some of the new stream media, us bloggers, we'd be there, but occasionally you'd get some of the more traditional stream media swinging through, and again, it was a really good time. But we got to talking 1 year about how we all missed Yulin with a Page. Long-time listeners of the show know I have an affinity to Sports Page. In fact, a good number of those who are in the sports community can harken back to Sports Page as being that TV show that really got them interested in sports broadcasting. But Yulin with a Page was their holiday special. It was a highlight show, but they also performed different skits and what have you. And you know, we were talking as a group, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could pull something like this off? We're a really talented group of people here. Let's do it. Yeah, maybe there was a little bit of liquid courage mixed in, but nothing came of it that particular year. Fast forward a season. And I had decided that, you know, I think we could do this maybe in a small sort of contained group, not this sort of wild, disparate, unplanned experience where everyone showed up. And we did a... 'Twas the Night Before Christmas poem themed to the Vancouver Canucks, and started to recruit others to be involved. So Jordan Bowman, despite our ongoing feud, he came out and got involved. Matt Sakaris was involved. There was a number of us from Canucks Hockey Blog. Nicole Van Santen, who at the time was working for the Vancouver Canucks, got involved. And we recorded it at the Rosedale and Robson, different hotel. But again, we just had some fun and published it, and it really resonated with the, you know, the Canucks community. I won't suggest that it's what springboarded. Clay, to his fame, with his Canucks holiday parody videos and such, but you can see, you know, former co-host Clay Emo in it. But it's that type of, you know, community experience when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks that I hold so true and dear. And the holidays have always been what sort of gets us into whether a good spirited festive mood. And I know that, you know, when it comes to Canucks Twitter and the Canucks social media experience, it isn't always a good one. And I don't think any community can claim to be the best, but something about this time of year just lightens the mood significantly. And there are other memories, like I had an opportunity to hang out with Clay and Murray Huey, the talented Murray Huey, to do a Canucks holiday video where Murray sang parody-themed or Christmas-themed songs. Clay performed the pianos. I was the announcer or the voiceover, although they had me on camera as well, but the voiceover talent. I got replaced, unfortunately, but hey, I mean, I can have my claim to fame. I was in a Clay Emo video many years ago. The Canucks would host holiday events for some of the people who helped engage the fan base within the social space, the CDC forums, Canucks Twitter and that. And so they'd host us in a suite, usually a game around this time of year. Again, all these good memories. And I know times are different. And obviously for you as a podcast and listener, you sort of may live vicariously through others, or maybe you yourself are experiencing them. But I think what's really cool is we have that opportunity each and every week when we record the show to experience it. Yes, you get to hear Anna and I sharing our perspective. But what I'd love to do more of in 2024 is get more of these perspectives, whether it be from Kathy, Sarah, whether it be from Keith or Ryan, and really get you, our listeners, more involved in our show. I don't know how we execute on that. I know I've kicked around the can a little bit as to try to make it accessible, being able to go and record a voice message or drop a line in C4 Discord or through social media and what have you. But, you know, I am open to any ideas that you might have. But that, you know, brings me to the point of the show where I normally look to wrap things up. And before I do, I wanted to wish you all a very festive holiday season for those of you who have a holiday to celebrate. And I also want to let all of those who might be in a spot where things aren't as festive as they could be to know that you're in my thoughts, and that Anne and I are fully supportive of you. And please know that we truly care about you as a listener, but more importantly as a person. And we're not the only ones that do. It is an opportunity for us to take a moment to reflect, but also reach out to our friends and family and use this as the impetus to potentially connect or reconnect. Hug that family member, have that friendly conversation, crack open a carton of eggnog and just enjoy the time. And if eggnog is truly a beverage you cannot tolerate, any beverage will do, as long as that beverage is shared between others, because really that's what it's truly about. But on behalf of Anna, you can find her on X or Twitter or what happens to be at A4603, myself, Chris, at Lightforce, I'm also on Threads, and the podcast at the C4 Podcast, or on Threads at the Real C4 Podcast. It has been a fabulous 2023, and I look forward to reconnecting with you all in 2024. But with all of that said, we're out.